welcome into the fan pregame here on Sportsnet. Sportsnet 590, Fan Eilish and Justin. Happy long weekend for our listeners that are probably on their way back from the cottage right now listening.
Yeah. Sneaks up on you.
Yeah, it sure does.
You're like in the throes of Stanley Cup playoffs, and all of a sudden there's a long weekend that doesn't really apply to us, so kind of forget about it a little bit. So I hope people are getting home safe and enjoyed some sunshine. The weather wasn't great over the weekend, but the cottage is the cottage, I suppose.
Yeah, we hope we can make your drive home or your get ready for work this upcoming week a little better, maybe therapeutic. We will have our text line open at 590-590, standard message and data rate supply. We're going to spend the second half of our block of our show today talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs, of course. The dust is starting to settle, and we want to ask you now, and we'll compile all those messages in our text line, what the single most urgent change the Maple Leafs must make this offseason, whether that's roster, whether that's jerseys, whether that's payroll, whether that's the mascot. This is your chance, and we want to hear it. But just the one single most important thing. I know there's probably a list for our listeners, but we just want to see where we fall on the single most important thing.
So the dust settling and the beer completely seeped and frozen into the ice at Scotiabank Arena.
Jerseys were being shoveled off. Saw.
Yeah, they're getting scraped off still as we speak.
Most definitely. We will discuss the Leafs and more around the halfway part of our show, around 6:30, but we have our conference final set for both the NBA and the NHL. They both start tomorrow night. Tonight's kind of more of a clean slate. We can all take a deep breath and look ahead. Panthers, Hurricanes start tomorrow. Oilers, Stars start Wednesday. And let's talk to our guest, our only guest of the evening, Liam McHugh of NHL on TNT. Liam, we appreciate you coming on and helping us look ahead and a little bit backwards when we look at the NHL in the second and third round. How's it going?
I can't imagine what you'd want to look backwards about. I can't imagine.
A couple years of pain, probably.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Here we are again.
I know. I know there's some of your coworkers that are probably feeling it today as well. But let's start with that Panthers-Canes series, because we just saw the Panthers, obviously, quite a lot here in the city of Toronto, and they're defending Stanley Cup champs. They're going to play the Hurricanes. And I couldn't help but think last night when I was watching Game 7, Maple Leafs, that Marchand and Seth Jones, like that trade deadline, probably really underappreciated at the time, underlooked. And those two players might have been the biggest additions, you know, when you look at what happened at the trade deadline and you look at how this Florida Panthers team looks like. I think that that was kind of genius by the Florida Panthers to add both those bodies.
It looks incredible now. And I think you're right. I think, in many ways, despite them being big names, it flew a little under the radar because Marchand was hurt for a while and wasn't playing. So you kind of forgot about that. And truth be told, I mean, you ask people about Seth Jones going into the playoffs, and their response was, Aaron Ekblad can't get back soon enough, because they didn't like the way Seth Jones was playing at that time. And they didn't feel like he was fitting as a top-tier D-man. And I think that was sort of a similar complaint that we'd heard about Seth Jones over the years, that he's paid like a number one defenseman, but he wasn't playing like one. It doesn't look like that now. Like, it's funny. Remember when we used to talk about Bobrovsky? You could not mention Sergei Bobrovsky without mentioning his contract. And it wasn't a positive. It was, he's got this deal. He's not really earning it. This is Sergei Bobrovsky, and now let's talk about his game. Seth Jones basically became that for D-man. And now, it's probably going to take a little bit more, but we're really not talking about that with Seth Jones. He looks like that guy. And Marchand is on another level in terms of gamers. And I thought it was really cool that we had Rick Tocchet on recently, and he talked about having Marchand on that Four Nations team and how everyone loved the guy in the locker room instantly. He took all the pressure off of everyone in there because he could be the mouthpiece, and he could let the guys who quietly lead, and he could let the guys who don't want to talk and just want to play their game just do that. And then you put him on the third line, and he's like, yeah, no problem. I'll go out on the third line, and I'll dominate when I'm out there on the third line. Doesn't bother me at all. And that's what he's done with the Panthers. So tremendous fits. And right now, I mean, you guys got a really good glimpse at it up in Toronto, but I think when they play at the level that they played in that Game 7, I don't see how anyone beats them. I really don't.
Yeah, I think their best is better than anyone else's best. Are they going to be able to produce that best four times? And I think that was the big question coming in with the Florida Panthers, when you've been to back-to-back Stanley Cup finals, when you are the reigning defending Stanley Cup champions, you have to ask yourself, I guess, are we going through this 2-month slog again? And I feel like after last night, like maybe that was the energy lift they needed. We just mentioned Marchand and Seth Jones bringing something completely new to the table for them and how much of a lift they brought just in that game alone, in that series alone. But when you get through two rounds, you get over the media thing that is Toronto, and now you're only 8 victories away from doing it again. It feels like, you know, the Panthers have got to the point now where there is no looking back, and it's like, hey, they're already halfway through, and that could be the energy lift that they needed to get through, or the hurdle that they needed to get to in order to be like, okay, let's do this again. Let's run this back.
I think there's something to that. And I think we do have to remember that, you know, Matthew Tkachuk had sat out for so long and then returned right at the beginning of the playoffs. And we had no idea what to expect. And we got pretty close to top tier Matthew Tkachuk right off the bat. I think he's dipped a little since then, but if he can rebound and maybe be a little bit more productive in the next round, he's still obviously out there and he's getting under people's skin. He's playing hard and he's hitting people and he's making the right little plays. But if he becomes more more potent from a point standard, that's a problem, obviously, for the Carolina Hurricanes. And, you know, Aaron Ekblad, I mean, he was suspended at the end of the year, and he wasn't hurt. So he was physically fine. And then kind of, you know, twisting the knife to everybody was the fact that he told everyone, I've never felt better entering the playoffs. So he gets suspended, he gets the rest, comes back, his body's healthy. And now when guys are starting to break down in the playoffs, because it's inevitable at this point, you get a bunch of players that didn't go through that grind because they were either recovering from something or they were suspended, and now they see the end. You're right. I think that's the thing with the Panthers now. Like, they now see what's there. It's a possibility for them to repeat. And I don't see how Carolina gets past it, except for the fact that their style is a problem for a lot of teams. And what you mentioned, just the idea that if you do see a dip in play and Carolina pounces, maybe the way the Leafs did, you know, in the first 2 games. But otherwise than that, no. I mean, you nailed it. Their best is better than everybody else's best.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you talk about the styles between the Panthers and the Canes. Like, the Canes have had this dialogue over the last, I guess, 2 series that their play is boring and that it's not high-flying, high-offensive type hockey. Like, how would you explain the Carolina Hurricanes and their style of hockey for fans that might not understand or might not get to see it as closely, because they're going to see it against a Panthers team that plays a really different style?
I think in many ways it's like, you know, the American viewer, and for a lot of Canadian viewers who are into the NFL, it's the old, like, defense wins championships, where it's like, well, that wasn't very exciting. It's like, and then you get the fan base who loves that team. They're like, I guess you don't like defense, huh? And, you know, they get like very, very touchy and defensive about this whole thing. It's constant pressure. It's constant pressure, and it's a buy into a system that most players don't want to buy into. And most players probably aren't physically fit enough to buy into, because they're playing man-to-man defense. They're skating around. That's a difficult thing to do on its own. You need to be incredibly fit and incredibly focused to do that. And Rod Brind'Amour demands that of his guys. And I think it's a straight line system up and down the ice. It is defensemen tossing pucks at nets. So you will have a lot of opportunities. They may not be grade A opportunities. They may turn into that on redirects. I think the thing that's haunted them over the years is that while they're a team that creates an abundance of opportunities, they're not a team that necessarily finishes off a ton of those. And that's where you get into the, this team lacks a superstar and you need a superstar to win it all. I'm not completely convinced that that's the case, because I think Andrei Svechnikov could be that superstar. I think this is the type of system that kind of masks the superstar. I think if Svechnikov went and played for another team, he'd probably put up a lot more goals and a lot more points. And he's starting to produce in the playoffs. He's starting to find the back of the net. And if he can continue to do that, that's something that's going to give Florida a problem. But, yeah, you're not watching McDavid and Draisaitl and they pop off the screen. It's just not that. It's a lot of tossing pucks from distance, playing tough defense, defending, killing penalties. It's a lot of the grit to the game, you know. And when you have a coach like Rod Brind'Amour, I mean, sometimes the funny thing is, sometimes he's the biggest star on the team. And that's not what we're used to in hockey, right? And I guess that's not a sexy thing, and it's not a sexy team to follow, but it's effective. The question is now, Brind'Amour has gotten his team through the first round of the playoffs 7 straight years. He's gotten the conference final a few times. They have never won a conference final game, though, under Rod Brind'Amour. That being said, I know they were swept by Florida 2 years ago. They could have won probably every one of those games, including a 4 overtime first game, but all the rest of them were 1-goal games. They're close. They're right there. If things bounce a certain way and Freddie Anderson is excellent, it's going to be competitive. I just don't know that they're, like we talked about, their best is not Florida's best. So it would take a, you know, maybe a poor performance from Florida for them to get by.
Yeah, I think both teams are in for a pretty sizable adjustment because the Hurricanes, as you alluded to, are kind of the antithesis of the Maple Leafs, and in that the Maple Leafs didn't became something that wasn't clearly an analytical, darling, not playing in the same way that the Canes do, relentlessly trying to just put pressure. They're waiting for their opportunities. And then for Carolina, they've just been hitting softballs up until this point, and now they get the standard, the best team in the NHL over the past couple of years in the Florida Panthers. So it'll be interesting to see how those two teams adjust. Let's go to the Western Conference Final rematch, Oilers and Stars. For me, there's been a feeling lately here with both teams that they have become inevitable to a certain extent. Have you sort of picked up on that as Edmonton found its game and as Dallas sort of got to the point where, oh, Mikko Rantanen is the rock star we envisioned he was going to be?
I think Rantanen's effect is pretty profound because I think before that, and if you look at, you know, what's happened with Dallas in terms of, you know, their other players scoring or lack thereof, you know, certainly with Matt Duchene, Tyler Seguin, like they haven't put up the points or the goals that you would expect. You needed someone to step up. Mikko Rantanen was otherworldly in a few of these games and, you know, really looked like the true superstar that you would sign to that deal and deserve that money, and you could build an entire offense around. It felt in many ways inevitable, although the West was always so stacked. I mean, Colorado's so high skill, and it seems like Vegas is there every year. But I will go back to, you know, the end of the regular season, neither team looked good at all. I mean, Dallas was brutal down the stretch. And then they'll tell you none of those games mattered, but it still worried you. You know, like, they let up a lot of goals. They were outshot in every game. You know, none of the numbers were good. And Edmonton looked like they were just content to be like, hey, listen, let's get healthy. You know, that's way more important. And I guess that was a more confident approach. But 2 games into that postseason, I mean, I thought Edmonton was done. I thought they were absolutely done. Didn't like the way they were playing at all. I loved L.A. And I think a lot of people were sitting there going, hey, the L.A. Kings, they could win the entire thing. Then we got, you know, what will go down in history is one of the worst challenges ever. I mean, Jim Hiller in many ways saved the Edmonton Oilers. He absolutely did. That is, I'm sorry to put it that way, but I was in the arena when Pete Carroll decided to throw the ball instead of run it and go win the Super Bowl. And it was up there in terms of that bad of a decision. And then he kind of doubled down on things because he's like, let's play prevent defense for a couple games here when we have the lead. And that backfired as well. And that breathed new life into this team. They feel inevitable now, the Oilers, because they're winning without McDavid and Draisaitl lighting it up. Mm-hmm. They're getting great defensive play. Skinner's, you know, has suddenly found his game after Pickard came in and really, really gave this team a boost. And you're getting that annoyed, prickly, angry McDavid that I love in the playoffs. He's just tired of all this. He doesn't need to talk about anything. All he wants to do is win the cup. To me, more than Dallas, Edmonton really does feel inevitable at this point. I think the big question for me is if Dallas gets some secondary scoring and Ottinger stands on his head, is this a 7-game coin flip? If not, I love how Edmonton is playing entering the series.
Sounds like you've got a rematch of the Stanley Cup final on your agenda moving forward.
It feels like that's the way it's trending. I think secretly I kind of want that. I mean, not just for the rematch, but because, you know, when we started this, we talked about no one's best is as good as Florida's, and that's the truth. The only thing that I think could top that is a McDavid Draisaitl individual performance.
Some revenge angle.
We didn't see. Yes. Oh, and they just suddenly go nuclear on everyone, and no one can stop them, and we get to see some of the greatest individual hockey we've ever seen. And I don't know, I'm trying to wish this into existence, I guess. You know, I'm certainly not doing it because I want to fly back and forth from Edmonton to Florida.
No.
But I just want to see this happen. And listen, if we don't get it and we get the other options, they're fantastic too. But there's something so enticing about this rematch.
Yeah, I think that's how I view it too. Like, I love a rematch when there's so much on the line for those Oilers players as well, and like that hunger of being one goal away basically from winning the Stanley Cup. I think it's fueled them through a lot of the highs and lows this season.
And just quickly, the same way, Liam, we were talking about Florida being energized, I think the Oilers have hit that same thing, right? Oh, we're now just eight wins away again. And it felt so far away at times in the season, I think, for Edmonton, but they are now right there. And I feel for that reason why we're just going to see the best version of the Oilers here in the Western Conference Final.
I don't think there's any doubt. I think it's a brutally long regular season when you know this is all that matters. And I just am left with that image of McDavid in the locker room where you can hear the celebration on the ice, the Panthers out there, and that look in his face. To me, it's burned into my memory, and I can't shake it. It feels like he is on a mission. So I'm hoping it happens, and I feel like if you get there, something special from him is going to occur. But we'll see what happens. I guess the difference this time would be, would it be in Edmonton? Game 7. I think it might be. I don't know. I don't have the record.
Quickly check.
My brain's fried.
I know. We'll get to the bottom of that. But you're right. It could change things. Home ice win. We're talking to Liam McHugh of NHL on TNT ahead of the set conference finals, which start tomorrow and then Wednesday with Oilers Stars. Okay, so one last one before we let you go. We'll ask you a little bit of Leafs. I mean, there's a lot to like sift through. There's the way they played last night and in Game 5, the way they left the fans hanging. There's discussion around the fans and the media and how much they might influence the way these players play. I guess I just want to take it a little bit more open-ended for you. Like, you're looking at what's next for this Leafs team. What is the biggest thing that needs to change, I guess, when you think about a core four and a tenure that hasn't gone the greatest for the Maple Leafs?
I think there's some clear things. I mean, I think Marner's played his last game. I don't think it's shocking to most. Tavares is up in the air. I think in many ways it depends how badly he wants to stay and, you know, deal contractually with what that means for him. Otherwise than that, I think you have to look really hard at the people that you bring in. And the people that you bring in, and I think Berube should have some say in this, are he's right. It's all between the ears. Mm-hmm. You have high-end skill. You have the talent to win. You just need guys who can be in that room and want to embrace that moment and are going to go out, lead, and play to win. And that doesn't always mean that, you know, they're the most elite skill players out there. I think you are looking for personalities and you are looking for leaders and you're looking for people who just are willing to do whatever it takes to win hockey games. It's a grit and grind mentality. And, you know, don't even worry. In many ways, don't worry about the stat sheets. You got enough guys to fill out those stat sheets. So I would suspect that Berube, you know, when he goes in, he talks to people about what needs to change. That's got to be it. And otherwise than that, I don't know. I mean, my big concern yesterday was what happens with the Leafs if this is a really great Game 7 and they fall just short, and we're not even having that discussion. It was so lopsided. They were not even close in that game. And I think that in many ways is what stings the most, is that they weren't close and they're tied long-term to so many of these players. So you now have to surround them with players who aren't going to increase their skill, but are going to increase their drive.
Is there something being bandied about a departure, a trade, a conversation, something that you think could be, when you look into the future, a mistake? Like, a lot of talk about Mitch Marner. Clearly, he has all the control, of course, but like Morgan Riley's name is out there. John Tavares' name is out there. Like, lots of guys are rumored to be potentially not long for this franchise, but if you look into the future and consider those, is there something that feels like, hey, be careful with that one?
No, I mean, I think Marner needs a fresh start. And I think there's a chance that you could get burned down the line where he could find the right place and he can win somewhere else. And that'll sting if you're a Leafs fan. I don't think he's going to win there. And if there was something that I would say you need to be careful about is who you decide to target and who you don't target. And I think someone who's out there, you know, you are looking for a Sam Bennett-like player in many ways. And you want to target that type of player and not worry as much about how many goals and points did this person put up during the regular season. You want someone with an edge who plays playoff hockey. And that is the bottom line. And if you get too caught up in numbers and analytics during the regular season, I think you're going to pay the price. I really do feel that way.
It's going to be an interesting July 1st, I'll tell you that. And then the whole rest of the summer, but mostly seeing what happens when free agency opens. Liam, we appreciate you coming on. For us, it's a holiday here, so we appreciate you coming on and helping us cover this one out. And we look forward to seeing how the conference finals shake up and the road to the Stanley Cup.
All right. Thanks so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. That's Liam McHugh of NHL on TNT. Okay, we talked about it. The conference finals are Panthers Hurricanes, which start tomorrow night, and Oilers Stars, which start on Wednesday. And the NBA as well, we have our conference finals set. It'll be Timberwolves and the Thunder and the Pacers and the Knicks. T-Wolves and Thunder start tomorrow, and then Wednesday night will be Pacers-Knicks.
Very quickly, the Oilers would have home ice advantage.
Yes, 101 points, right?
101 points compared to 98 for the Florida Panthers. So
could be the difference maker.
The Final Four, it's very like, yeah, it's basically what it was last year. Swap out the Hurricanes or swap out the Rangers for the Hurricanes. But all four teams did not play particularly well down the stretch. That did not matter. Of course, Dallas, the worst of them on that 7-game losing streak. So remember when we did our, like, what makes a Stanley Cup champion?
Rest versus rust.
Yeah, tweak things just a little bit. And, you know, the importance of actually being a dominant team in the Stanley Cup playoffs and dominant players in the Stanley Cup playoffs, which, again, the Maple Leafs have to consider themselves here. And you know what? We were surprised with the Four Nations, like, the players that were making these teams. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the way you have to look at it. Again, he said the regular season's got to throw that out a little bit more, but, like, more of that thinking where it's like, yeah, Sam Bennett didn't impress anyone really with his regular seasons, but boy, did they want him on that roster.
It's like having a winner.
It's not just about Sam Bennett. There are other guys out there. You have to unearth those players because clearly what happens in 82 is not as important as what happens this time of year.
Okay, let's do some quick best bets. We'll take a break, and then we're going to talk Leafs. And we've been taking your text at 595.90. Standard message data rates do apply. And our question is simple and open-ended for all of our listeners. Maybe you're driving home from the cottage and you stayed late to watch that game and you've had a grumpy drive home. Or maybe you're feeling optimistic. That would be strange. You can tell us how. The text question is, what's the single most urgent change the Leafs must make this offseason? The offseason started today, and I believe locker room cleanout will be tomorrow, and I'm sure we'll have that here on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What's the one thing, single most important thing that the Leafs need to do? We'll try to get to some of your texts on the other side of the break. My best bets are forward thinking. The most fun finals and the least fun finals. The most fun finals for me would be the Oilers to beat the Panthers, which is plus 500. I'm in agreement with Liam that I just see this revenge angle. You get both teams back in there, be the Panthers for the third time in a row in the Cup final and the Oilers getting their vengeance. It's actually the most popular or the shortest odds to actually happen, but 5-1 Oilers to beat the Panthers. And for the NBA, I think the Knicks to beat OKC would be the most fun final for me. Watching what's been happening in New York, Bing Bong is back. Like, the Knicks are electric. That city looks amazing. And have OKC in the final, obviously, I know with you and your Shea love, might not be the most fun for you, but I think it would be a really fun atmosphere to see the Knicks beating OKC. And then on the other side of it, I'll give you my least fun finals.
Very quickly, it'll be interesting to see what happens if we get that final in OKC. Like, the tickets are like $170. Are Knicks fans just going to take
over? Yes, they'll be going to
I don't know if they will, though, because they're so loyal. Yeah, they have the best crowd. I want to know what actually
just seeing all the celebs out for, like, the Knicks. Like, Timothy Chalamet is, like, a celebrity.
Yeah, but I want, like, regular people from OKC to be like, no,
like,
Spike
no, I'm
Jones,
coming to the game.
I'm going to the game.
Yeah, it would be a very interesting dynamic. Yeah. My least fun finals, and I'm just saying that because I don't feel the same passion, would be the Hurricanes to beat the Stars. I just think, I don't want to see that. It'd be probably the least fun for me. And also, I couldn't really convince myself on a least fun NBA final, but I think I got Pacers to beat the T-Wolves. And that might be reversible, T-Wolves to beat the Pacers. I just don't think those teams scream as much fun to me. I'll let you weigh in, NBA professional.
I think, yeah, this isn't like the greatest Final Four in NBA
history. Timber Puppies, that's why.
There you go. This isn't the greatest Final Four. I think the most interesting final is probably we get the, like, we actually get to figure out who won the trade between the Knicks and the Timber Puppies, because Karl Anthony Towns is also obviously at the forefront of, like, the major offseason switch. So to have that litigated in the NBA Finals, I think that's kind of cool. But, like, let's face it, it's not necessarily the four teams with the most intrigue going.
All right.
But I think the best final would be just the Knicks and OKC.
Yeah.
Because you get
the hype
of New York. Yes. And then you get the brilliance of, I think, the only truly great team out of the four in the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Okay.
I will go to the Conn Smythe market. I like the Florida Panthers. Again, we've been kind of like, okay, Florida is the best team when they're at their best. So if they go back to the final, which I think is probably likely, they're probably going to produce a Conn Smythe winner this year. I don't think they do that to them twice in a row.
That would be wild.
And really the only guy that stands out is Sergei Bobrovsky. Like, they are, it is just, it's so, and it's the mark of a great team, but no one stands out offensively. No one stands out from a forward perspective. No one stands out defensively, although Seth Jones did in game 7. It would go to Sergei Bobrovsky, I think, in that sense. And 8-1 is a good price still.
Yeah, the goaltenders are kind of leading the way for three of the teams, I think, right now to win the Conn Smythe. It's Connor McDavid, first favorite to win the Conn Smythe. Then Mikko Rantanen. But right behind him is Jake Oettinger. And Mikko Rantanen had a really electric 2 games in a row. But other than that, only scored one other goal in the last series. So he might need to pick it up if Jake Oettinger doesn't surpass him. Bobrovsky is the favorite right now for Florida, and Freddie Anderson is a favorite right now for Carolina. So it's three goalies versus Connor McDavid and Mikko Rantanen right now.
I got my spikes wrong, by the way. It'll be Spike Lee trying to get
Who did you say?
I said Spike Jones.
Oh, yeah, that's not the right
Spike. I don't even know what Spike Jones is.
Yeah, I don't know, but I'm kind of, like, interested in finding out. One thing that we did talk about off-air one time, we didn't bring to air, was the Stanley Cup handoff. And I just was curious about where we're at with the Stanley Cup handoff. And I think that we made the bet when it was about 200 or 300 to 1. It's now 80 to 1. But Seth Jones get the cup first for the Florida Panthers. Hasn't won ever. He's one of the four longest tenured in
He's
the
played
playoffs.
Played in almost 900 games in the NHL.
And everybody else on that team already won the cup.
So aside from, well, yeah, Brad Marchand has.
Yeah, he's already won it. He's 16 to 1.
Nate Schmidt would be another
Nate
option.
Nate Schmidt is 24 to 1.
But if you're doing the, yeah, I mean, I think Seth Jones is an obvious pick, and he's
80 to 1.
Hanging around 60 to 81. And we got it like 200 or something.
We did. So we feel bad we didn't tell you that earlier, but now we're telling it to you. How about that? Okay.
Still some value.
Still lots of value. We'll take a quick break. On the other side, we will chat about the Toronto Maple Leafs, end of the season. We're taking your texts at 590-590. They are pouring in, so we will sift through them. We'll try to get to them. But we'll also try to break down what needs to happen, what we might want to hear tomorrow at Locker Room Cleanout Day, which should be around 10:30 as well, and what the next couple months should bring for the Maple Leafs. So we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Fan Pregame here on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. As we mentioned earlier in the show, both conference finals, all four conference finals in the NBA and the NHL kick off tomorrow. So tonight's action is...
Can't get a one-day stagger on these two leagues.
Well, they will be staggered.
Conference finals starting the same day.
I guess I see what you mean. So tonight we got some interesting viewing opportunities for you, including some WNBA action. Seattle and Dallas will be our Sportsnet 1 offering and Sportsnet 360 at 8 p.m., and Houston and Tampa Bay and some MLB action, 7 o'clock across the Sportsnet channels. And then late night action on Sportsnet 1 will be Arizona and the Dodgers, 10 p.m. So you can just take your frustrations out and watch some different sports while you get set for some NHL action, which will return tomorrow, and the NBA as well. It'll kick off with Panthers Hurricanes, which doesn't give Panthers much rest, and the Timberwolves and the Thunder.
In the meantime, let's do a little fan post game, a little post-mortem, Toronto Maple Leafs. I wonder, as you are the resident Leafs fan on this panel, how you felt when it got ugly last night. Because, you know, like, there's one thing is like, okay, the recognition that this is over. This has all been failed. The Shannon plan failed, all that stuff, whatever. We'll get into it. But when it gets, like, really ugly and it's a reflection on your fan base and it's a reflection on just how angry everybody is, Like, that's when it kind of goes to that next level, the uncomfortable level. And I can't imagine you weren't a little uncomfortable watching that.
Yeah, like in terms of like how fans were reacting or like the discourse online or
everything. Just basically when it was like, okay, they lost, and how ugly it got online, in the building, everywhere.
I think the first thing that comes to mind as a response to that is like, I totally understand where the frustration comes from for people who have been Leaf fans for a really long time. And I don't think that that should reflect any way on the players. Like, I don't know how we've got into this conversation, and we'll play some audio maybe later, where that this fan base makes it too hard to play in Toronto. I don't see that correlation. I don't think that's a fair thing to put on the fans. I think the fans are passionate. It's like a privilege to play in a very passionate fan base. I played sports, and I didn't ever have a fan base that cared like this fan base. And I almost wish you could just feel how lucky you would feel to play in a fan base where they care so much that they are upset and they're pissed off and they're emotional. And some things they cross the line. Like, I think throwing things on the ice during play, that crosses the line.
Yeah,
that's too much.
I've been so in the camp of that, like, this entire time. Mm-hmm. And I still am. Like, I think it's the most ridiculous thing in the world that people blame the media and fans for the struggles of this team, because the fan base should not be as supportive as it is. And the media is kid gloves. I know that being
on
the beat for a while. The only thing that you want to get is positivity, because that's the only thing that drives clicks and engagement and everything that you want as someone who's trying to do that job well. The things that provide that, positive. The things that don't, negative. It is very simple. You would prefer the storylines to be positive if you're covering the Toronto
Maple Leafs. How great would a story have been last night if the Leafs, who had a horrible first 10 minutes, like, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, this is over. And then they come back and they find the second half of that first period, and then they win a game 7. Like, I think we'd all want to tell that story. We'd want to come on here and be positive. We'd want to be like, yes, the Leafs overcame their demons. They're going to the conference finals. Wow, they can actually beat the Hurricanes. Oh my God, they might go to the Stanley Cup. I don't know why there's this perception that it's so hard to be in this market. Like, I really think that if they were to win something, they would be like gods, like somebody once said. Like, they would be so, they would just never have to ever think about what their legacy is. So I just want to say, like, I don't see the connection between them having success and failure and the fan base being too hard to play in front of, and the people that cover the game being too critical.
It's just deflecting.
Yes, it is deflecting.
This team did not have what it takes to actually win at this level, and then you're just trying to find excuses and reasons for it.
I think we're in agreement. We don't need to rehash
that. I will say, though, very
much.
Quickly, if beer cans were going on the bench, which there's been some reports that happened, right?
Yeah, I saw
players dodging beer cans. Like, that's the first time in my life that I thought, okay, maybe it's not that great to play for this team, because that is not great.
Yeah, I can see
that. That is the first time, and this is like 1% of 1% stuff in terms of the entire picture, but that is not good, and that is not the reflection that you want from the fan base, and that is not the last, like, impression made on this group. Leading into a critical offseason where you've got to make unbelievable change, you have to actually be a draw, and again, the final impression, the lasting image of the season is, you know, beer showers and cans hitting the ice and hitting the bench. That's not a great
look. I agree. And I wouldn't let that one fan who threw the one beer be an indication of what this fan base is like, because I'm a part of it. I know my friends, family, loved ones are Leafs fans. And
just 99%, saying, image needs to be rehabbed a little bit after
I agree.
That.
But that's not what Leafs fandom is. It is like coming back to it every year and being passionate and being like, this is the year. We believe. We're back. Like, the passion. So I do think that that's crossing a line, but I wouldn't say that that's how I would view the Leafs fandom. I would say, though, today is a very big discussion. I just wanted to get that one out of the way. Like, it's not your fault because you're a fan that the Leafs didn't win. I will say there are definitely some. This is when you asked me about how I felt when I was watching it. I think the fact that it was such a disaster in game 5 and game 7 almost made it easier for me to be like, all right, it's time. Like, we are going to cut the cord. We are going to get rid of this core forward narrative. We're going to start at the top. Like, I do think if they would have lost last night in overtime and it was a bad goal off of somebody's butt, that there would be that little glimmer of like, well, you know, they were so close. They're not close. They're not close. They weren't close to halfway being close to winning a Stanley Cup. And it was embarrassing, and it was horrible for the fans in attendance, and it was just a really, really bad showing. So I think it actually makes it easier to be cutthroat, and I think you need to be cutthroat.
I think that's a great point. It was laid bare. We talked about how it could be laid bare if they lost to Ottawa. Well, it was laid bare against the Florida Panthers team. And you could, again, twist yourself, do the mental gymnastics. Wow, game 7 with a team like that, like, you got to run it back. Mitch Marner's probably not going to allow you to run it back, but the way that it happens ensures that it shouldn't. Mm-hmm. Because you could look at it as a whole, or you could even just boil it down to individual performances. Mm-hmm. Like, go and watch every shift Morgan Riley took last night.
Oh, it was bad.
It's not going to paint a very good picture. Go and watch the same, the entire series for John Tavares. Not going to be a good pitcher. You could break it down at every single level, and I think they should. Like, if there's, let's say there's a change at the top. I don't know what's going to happen with Brendan Shanahan, contract expiring. Like, I think, not make the assumption, but I think there's a really good possibility that there's a change at that level. The person that comes in, if there's someone that comes in, has to basically treat everything that wasn't directing positivity, was not causing something good to happen, wasn't a good story to tell, and make the change at that level. Like, I, honestly, it has to be nitpicked. Are you a true crime? Might not be a lot of people left on the roster.
That may be true,
but are you like a true crime person, like a homicide investigation?
I love homicides, yes.
No, but does that interest you at all?
Yes, I watched enough of those.
I honestly think this has to be treated as a homicide. Okay. There are bodies. Because how many interviews do they conduct where, you know, the mailman that might have walked by in the area is interviewed? And what did they see?
That's true.
I think every single person who works in this organization almost has to give their opinion on what could be rotten. Mm-hmm. What's not working? What's not working in sales? What's not working in the entertainment product? What's not working in all these different departments, and figure out the answers to why it's not working? And that will, again, the most specific and most, you know, important information will come as it pertains to the management group and the roster. But I feel like you've gotten to the point now where you just can't be like, hey, I think that will get better if we give it time. No more give it time. If something's not working at any level inside that organization, I think it needs to be fixed right now, because the hoping and waiting for something to turn clearly has not worked. So stop doing that. Fix every issue, get to the bottom of what's rotten with this group and with that building, inside that building, and maybe you can fix this.
Okay, I totally agree. I think rotten is a good word, because just removing one piece of a puzzle doesn't mean that, like, the other pieces fit perfectly. It might be, like, as you said, like, look at each singular asset or each singular organism of this team. I think we can easily go through some of those big decisions, like UFA, John Tavares, UFA, Mitch Marner. Those are two of the core four. If you had to make, not a prediction or a, your, just your thoughts on if they should be a part of this team or not, for me, I think it's no to Mitch Marner, and it's a possibility to John Tavares, depending on how much that's going to cost. I'm not totally in one camp or another with if John Tavares should be a Maple Leaf. I think he wants to. He said right afterwards, he was very vocal about wanting to be a Leaf. Mitch Marner didn't say that. I think it's
that right there is a huge problem, by the way.
Well, yeah, and you know,
the belief that they could do something when a player had made a decision, it very much seems like.
And tomorrow he's going to have locker room clean out, and maybe he changes his toning a little bit. Like, I'm not ready to talk about free agency, yeah. But anyway, I think that for me, it's Marner, fresh slate somewhere else, has an opportunity to do his own thing, and maybe John Tavares on a discount that makes sense for this team.
Yeah. Again, I think I'd like to be, what I would like to do is do the homicide thing. Like, I'd like to honestly watch every single shift that John Tavares played in these playoffs, cross-reference to a certain point in March.
Okay. Yeah.
December.
Well, he's getting older. I don't think he can be your second
but
line.
I need to get to the bottom of an evaluation on this player and be like, okay, we can't win with you if you make that determination as the second line center, as a 35-year-old making this. Mm-hmm. What we do feel comfortable is your ability to potentially move around the lineup, play on the power play, and actually add some secondary scoring that this team has been without, but use your $11 million that you've been earning for the last 7 years on someone who could actually fill that void.
I feel like
that's where I'm at. But again, maybe there are other reasons why John Tavares wasn't as productive as he needs to be. But my gut instinct would be, as it was a year ago, as it was 6 months ago, where, yeah, you're having a great season, but you need to help this team, not hinder this team. And if you want to stick around, yeah, Maple Leafs management probably has to use it against him just a little bit, that there isn't another option for you, at least it seems, and be like, yeah, I don't know. How can we go year by year? Can we pay you a lot at the back, or pay you a lot right up front? and push it across 7 years. Yeah. Like we have to get creative here or it's not going to work, because $7 million of actual dollars on a 3-4-5 year term is just not going to give us a chance to actually be different than we are now.
Okay. So those just two pieces, there's a lot more into pieces. So let's go through some of the pieces. I think, let's go finish the core four. William Nylander and Mitch Austin Matthews, I think for me, they're still part of this team moving forward.
Yeah, most questions I've ever had about Austin Matthews. I want to know what the injury is.
I think we need to find out the injury tomorrow at locker room cleanout.
I would love to see you not tethered to Mitch Marner anymore.
And like, I think that's fair.
Can you find a way? Like this, his contract, it's not lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see another look with Austin Matthews, and I want to see him healthy. Maybe he can't be healthy. I don't know
tomorrow. I hope there's some transparency with his injury. He didn't want to say it last night, which I respect. Like, he didn't want it to sound like an excuse. Like, hey, first question was, tell us about your injury. And he's like, we just lost. I don't think it's fair. But tomorrow it's got to be, hey, yep, this is what happened. I'm going under surgery. It's going to be 4 months, 6 months is what I was dealing with. We need to know that. Like, you're the captain of this team. You've had multiple injury issues. You went to Germany. It's time to know.
Yeah. Okay. And I would like to, you know, as part of my asking everyone under the sun what they think, do you think he's a good captain? Concessions guy? Do you think he's a good, like, go on down the line.
Concessions
Did he
guy.
Do a good job as a captain this year? And I think there's the answers in that room.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have to find out what it
you
is.
You think they would really take the C
I'm
off
not
him
saying that.
1 year after
I'm
put
not
it
saying
on?
That, but maybe some real discussions about what your year was like this year.
Yeah.
And what it means moving forward have to be.
I think for sure there's a question about his leadership abilities. I don't think that the answer that he gave last night about theirs being passengers
to me
feels like something you would say without looking and pointing back at yourself and saying, well, hold on a second. I might also be part of the passengers.
I don't even care about the injury tomorrow. Detail that passenger's comment.
Yeah, I think
who
that's
are the
a
passengers?
Huge.
Were you a passenger?
I think he was.
You looked like a passenger last night. So tell us more about that comment.
Okay, so we're in agreement there, and I think questioning his leadership ability is very, very on the table. I just cannot say that I think that the Maple Leafs would have the stones to take the C off Austin Matthews.
I'm not
Matthews.
Saying that either.
No, I know you're not.
But again,
but that's a question that should be answered.
Just hoping things will get better, hoping he becomes a captain, hoping he becomes that
guy. Put him in leadership camp this summer.
Maybe that has to be. Like, you can't just be like, oh, he'll be fine.
Okay, so
that thinking has to be over.
Let's keep going because we had a lot to go through. Those are just the core four. I think Morgan Rielly, who is on a long still contract, I'm pulling it up, until 2028.
Underpaid, I should be. He took less.
Okay,
underpaid.
Well, I think he is being overpaid in the role he is. He has a no movement clause, but he's making $7.5 million and was probably one of the worst players on the team last night. And I just want to say, look at the additions they were able to make who, like, jumped above Morgan Rielly this year. Jake McCabe, Brandon Carlo, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Christopher Tanev, Simon Benoit. I think we're all better defensemen than Morgan Rielly. You got to ask him to waive his no-trade clause.
And guess what else happens if Mitch Marner leaves? You're trying to get the guy who plays the point on the power play, and it's not Mitch Marner.
I think you need to try to move him.
Like, if this is fantasy world and you could make sure that Morgan Rielly leaves and a real stud number one defenseman enters, I mean, that is the biggest change this team could make.
Yeah.
I think they have to have those discussions.
It's a hard conversation. He's got a no trade clause, but you got to try.
And I think it's the avenue that could create and be the most beneficial towards change.
Okay. Totally agree. And that's a hard one because you've been given a no trade clause. We got about 5 minutes. So a couple other things. I think for sure you got to lock Matthew Nyes up. He's a part of your new core.
Next.
Maybe we don't use the word core anymore.
Maybe next. Yes.
Okay.
Number one priority.
Yeah. Number one priority is also him. How about somebody that plays like a Florida Panther or an Edmonton Oiler or a Dallas Star with some snarl, with some like aggressiveness? I think you need to sign somebody that's pain in the butts. I forget if I was listening to JD or the hockey show today, but they mentioned like having a JT Miller type pain in the butt on your team that isn't just about, I love life and I love like the Drew House merch, like somebody that's going to actually be accountable and hold you accountable. Like I know JT Miller had a no trade clause and also got traded, so things can happen, but you need a pain in the butt on your team.
Yeah. Not even that. You need multiple, I think, for the survivors. Like let's assume William Nylander is a survivor and Austin Matthews is a survivor. They need to be surrounded, insulated by people who are not unlike Mitch Marner, but like the polar opposite, people that are completely different, people that are going to push these players in a different way. If you want to break bad habits, you're going to have to do something to break them. You're going to have to introduce something that will change that or help promote change for that. They have to get guys who are completely different than the ones who haven't been able to get it done.
I totally agree. Okay, so we only have about 3 minutes. So I promised I'd read some texts.
Oh, that's why you're rushing.
Well, I just feel bad. There's a million texts. Okay. One thing we didn't talk about was Shanahan and Diane from Burlington saying, time for culture change. Shanahan era needs to end. He did not build a team. He did not put it in the power of the hands of the people that needed to. I agree, Diane. John from Nova Scotia wants to trade Morgan Riley. We just talked about that. Bob from Sudbury says, take the C away from Matthews and get a captain with some heart. Michael from Vancouver, the Leafs need someone to handle business. No one answered for Albo Segoli's heads. Chris from BC, a true number one goalie. I actually don't agree with that. I think we're okay with the goalies. Do you think?
Yeah. And Wall? I think you could probably...
Lower on the to-do list.
Yeah.
Unless one falls in your lap. And then we have a comment just about keeping Tavares because what other centers are out there. I think this is something we'll unpack a little bit later about what's actually on the free agent market. We don't have enough time to go through it all, but there aren't a lot of like superstars available. Mitch Marner is the best available player and you're probably going to lose him. So it's going to be an interesting year where you're getting ready to learn Yanni Gourde.
How good is your defense core if Aaron Ekblad or Seth Jones replaces Morgan Riley? It's pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. Pretty good, pretty different. And, you know, the Seth Jones thing is convenient because he just dominated game 7. But the Seth Jones stock was so low, I didn't know if he could play hockey anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he could be that guy. They need to
make a scenery.
They need to make a Seth Jones deal where you take someone who would be considered distressed, would be pennies-ish on the dollar, and slot them into a situation where they are dominant. And that might be the thing that happens with Morgan Riley or Mitch Marner or go down the line. Like, they may have success elsewhere, but it wasn't working here anymore. And the shifts last night is exhibit X on a long list of examples of it not working.
We don't have so much time to unpack this, but Brad Marchand, who's a free agent at the end of the season, making a lot of comments on how he was a Leafs fan and he's the type of player that maybe we're talking about adding winner, pain in the butt, holds people accountable, tough to play against, gives it his all every shift. I think Leafs Nation would probably cringe at the sight of it, but like he's a guy with Sam Bennett who's available that might really be annoying to have on your team, but you'd love it. But do they want to come play for Toronto is a big question.
I don't know.
Maybe they go win another cup.
I don't know. I don't know what this they
year,
want.
Not next year.
But I know there are players who fit the mold who would want to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. It's not for everybody, clearly. Like, it was not for Mitch Marner.
Yeah.
I think that's, like, one thing that
that's
we
pretty
can
clear.
Pretty clearly state and be confident in saying. But there are guys who would work under these conditions. Again, the conditions aren't that bad. The conditions aren't always the most favorable. But again, the fruits of your labor at the end would be unbelievable. And if you just work hard, guys like Scott Laughton earned a lot of respect.
Yep.
Stephen Lorenz learned a lot of respect.
Yep. I thought Lorenz
guys
played great in that first
period. Guys who put an honest effort and were not scared of the moment, they get a pass.
Yeah.
The people who didn't want to touch the puck at times in that game.
Those guys had the passion,
don't
Justin.
Get the pass.
Lorenz, Laughton, those are passion havers.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly not enough time to unpack the entire Maple Leafs season and off season, and what's the change and who's going to move and blah, blah, blah. But we will do that probably throughout the next couple of weeks, and of course, when free agency begins. And tomorrow's locker room cleanout day for the Leafs, so hopefully we get some answers. But I don't feel like we're overreacting. I think we've had years of waiting and wishing and hoping, and, you know, how many times can you be knocked down before you're like, I can't do this anymore? And I think that's how a lot of people are feeling today. So we appreciate you sending your texts in at 590-590, and hopefully we can sprinkle them out throughout the rest of the week. Any final words?
20 seconds. Should PWHL fans feel a certain way about the expansion rules?
I don't have enough for 20 seconds.
Good or bad? Just good or bad?
I think it's going to create a very, very, very strong expansion to teams, which is what you want, a strong league.
So it hurts the Scepters then?
It hurts everybody, but it kind of benefits the two expansion teams.
Okay.
We can get into that a bit more.
So we're going to have like a Vegas Golden Knight
situation. They might win
situation.
The cup in year one, yeah. Okay. Seattle and Vancouver. All right, that's it for us today. Happy Victoria Day, everyone. We will be back tomorrow. We've got lots to go through. Have a great night.